Asia.
Making stuff in South Asia. Tailored solutions. How India can compete in labour-intensive manufacturing.
Shahriz Ahuja is the chairman of Shahi Exports, India's biggest exporter of clothes. Two things about his business surprise. With some 50 factories and $1 billion in annual revenues, Shahi is managing to expand even as most peers in its sector struggle. It is also short of workers, says Mr. Ahuja, at a time when many young Indians complain that their country offers too few jobs. Shahi's experience helps inform a debate about India's economy. The share of Indians who work in manufacturing is lower than in comparable countries at 11% and has not much budged for years. Exports of textiles and garments, one of the biggest subsectors, have actually fallen in value over a decade. Some economists think the time when India could develop through labour-intensive manufacturing of this sort has passed. Yet the achievements and challenges of a superstar exporter suggest that there are still lots of ways to help such firms grow. India's clothing and textile industry is the third largest sector by employment after farming and construction, yet only a fraction of its 45 million workers labour in the formal industry, meaning for firms that are registered and pay tax, Shahi is the most successful exporter among those. It has made great leaps since it was founded in the early 1970s by Mr. Ahuja's mother, Sarla, in her home in New Delhi. These days, most of its business is conducted in southern India. It does a lot of things differently from its competitors. More than any other Indian family businesses, Shahi has sought to place experienced professionals, not lucky sons, into its top jobs. The firm owns the mills that produce fabrics for its clothing, which makes it easier to meet tight deadlines imposed by the likes of Nike and Uniqlo. Demanding foreign buyers have helped instill good business practices, says an executive at a rival firm. In one Shahi factory, whiteboards help supervisors keep track of targets. Its workers, mostly women, seem motivated. While Shahi has been accused of permitting poor working conditions in the past, it seems to have improved. In some other regards, however, Shahi has struggled to surmount limitations that also inhibit its peers. Despite being the market leader, it is smaller than you would expect. It accounts for only 2.5% of India's exports of clothes and textiles. And it participates in an industry that, as a whole, exports far less than it could. Mr. Ahuja compares India, and particularly West Bengal, with Bangladesh. They are in the same region, have the same types of people, the same culture. But Bangladesh exports four times as many clothes by value. For some, the explanation is poor education in India, which has left workers short of skills. But anyone can be trained, says Rags Ramanujam, Shahi's chief executive. Weak infrastructure and insurance markets also get blamed. But an analysis by Gopal Nadodur, formerly of Niti Aayog, the government's in-house think tank, finds that transport and insurance costs are roughly the same in India, Bangladesh, and Vietnam. Instead, three things hold India back. The first are labour laws. India's Factories Act makes it next to impossible for firms with more than 100 to 300 employees, depending on the state, to fire workers. That makes them risk-averse, which affects how large they grow. Shahi lessens the impact of the law by requiring new staff to go through a one-month training program, which tests whether they're up to snuff. But other firms get round the problem by using contract labour, which cuts their incentive to invest in training that might make staff more productive. A particular problem with firing restrictions is that they make it more difficult to shut a factory and relocate elsewhere. The chance of getting trapped in one place deters firms from investing. The whole world would come to India, Mr. Ahuja thinks, if business became easier to do. Shahi finds rules about overtime another challenge. In Karnataka, a southwestern state in which it has a lot of factories, firms are required to pay overtime wages of double the standard rate if workers toil for more than 48 hours per week. In Bangladesh, where overtime wages are 1.5 times the usual, firms often operate longer days. The second thing limiting India is its trade restrictions. America revoked India's duty-free status in 2019 because Donald Trump deemed India too protectionist. The EU puts tariffs of 10 to 12% on imports of clothing from India while maintaining trade agreements with Bangladesh and Vietnam. This fee demolishes Indian exporters' margins. The third big barrier is that even manufacturers who are eager to expand can find it difficult to persuade Indian workers to leave farms and join factories full-time. Indians sometimes feel compelled to carry on farming land that has been passed down through their family for decades. A popular rural welfare scheme adds to the advantages of village life. Youngsters who do find jobs in the cities sometimes still return to their villages to work the harvest, in part because harvest time labouring pays wages that are only a bit lower than those paid by many entry-level manufacturing jobs. Were textile firms bigger and more profitable, they might be able to offer salaries high enough to overcome this. As things stand, they often cannot. Both Mr. Ahuja and Mr. Nadadur think that as a result of all this, workers are some 20 to 30% more productive in Bangladesh than in India. As for Vietnam, another competitor, it has higher wages but also more business-friendly rules and better access to big Western markets. What can be done? India's government seems to understand the issues, but politics gets in the way. Amended labour laws were passed a few years ago, but their implementation has stalled at the state level. In any case, say firms, the reforms have not tackled their biggest concerns. Goodies that have supposedly been made available through the government's flagship industrial subsidy scheme, production-linked incentives, or PLIs, are too hard to get, says Mr. Ahuja. The subsidy requires a minimum size of investment. Most clothes makers do not qualify because they split big investments across a number of factories in order to make sure that they are close to workers. A newer government scheme, employment-linked incentives, pays the first month of a newly hired worker's wages and a portion of their first year's salary after that. In theory, that may help firms allay their worries about taking on more staff and perhaps help them pay wages that can attract workers all year round. But it is only a small step towards solving manufacturers' problems. It is time the government stitched together a much more ambitious plan.